Hey, 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 everybody. What's up? And welcome to another episode of Taking Stock Live, joining you live and direct all the way from Belize tonight. Praying my internet connection holds up. So far, so good. Seems like everything is working well, and I see a lot of you in the comments early. It's going to be an interesting show tonight. I'm sure many of you saw the thumbnail, and you know who our guest is already, but we're going to have to flip the switch this evening because Kadeen was actually traveling today, and his flight was delayed. He has assured us that he'll be able to join us around 8:30. So this evening, we're actually going to start with our analyst panel first and then get to our interview with Kadeen Mears. Lots of interesting questions to ask him, lots of developments with his resignation, sudden and shocking, from Dollar Financial. So let's take a look at what's coming up in tonight's show, followed by what's hot in business, and then we'll get into the analysts.
Dollar CEO Kadeen Mears has resigned. What led to his resignation, and what's next for the entrepreneur? Kadeen Mears will join us to discuss his decision and give us the scoop on his future plans. And the analysts weigh in on the latest market developments. Equity trader at JMMB, Clive Charlton, gives his perspective on the latest development on Dollar Financial Services. We'll discuss. But first, here's What's Hot, brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. GK Capital Management and JN Fund Managers are the latest stock exchange brokers to launch their own subscription platforms. Both the GK One Wealth and Bloom platforms allow investors with a valid Jamaican Central Securities Depository account number to sign up and apply for and purchase shares from IPOs, APOs, and rights issues. Customers would not need to be clients of GK Capital or JN Fund Managers to sign up for the platform. Investors will also be able to apply from anywhere and complete the application process online. CEO of Grace Kennedy Group, Don Webby, says the company is looking to expand its position in the Springwater market through the acquisition of manufacturing company Unibev. GK recently announced that it has come to an agreement to acquire the Portland-based beverage company. Unibev is a privately owned Jamaican company that is involved in all aspects of the beverage manufacturing process, including sourcing raw materials and packaging. Webby said the deal, which is subject to customary closing conditions, will strengthen the company's position in the growing Springwater market. GK also has a 70% stake in Catherine Speak and owns 100% of 876 Springwater Brands. Small and medium-sized businesses will now be able to borrow more from the Development Bank of Jamaica. The DBJ said it has raised its limit for collateral support to SMEs requiring loan guarantees. The limit was previously capped at under $30 million. The increase will now see collateral support being offered within the range of $35 million to $50 million. The increase, which took effect on June 1, is being done under the bank's partial guarantee program, the Credit Enhancement Facility. International credit rating agency Fitch last week downgraded the United States credit rating from AAA to AA+. The credit rating is an assessment of the U.S. government's ability to meet its debt obligations. According to Fitch, the downgrade was the result of multiple factors. The agency argued that raising the U.S. debt ceiling took too long and the country's debt-to-GDP ratio soared to 113%. Fitch said that the United States debt is on an unsustainable course and that lawmakers have chosen dysfunctional and unproductive ways to address that fact. What's Hot was brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart.
My name is Trisha Gay O'Connor, and I'm an attorney at law. I attended the Real Estate Investing for Beginners course. It is a topic that has always appealed to me. I came away with a strategy as to how to invest in real estate. So I thought it was something that was definitely a goal, but a far-reaching one, but it seemed much more attainable once I attended it and heard the strategy.
And you're better off, honestly, just buying the property, holding it, and as the value goes up over time, you can access a second mortgage or a home equity loan, as they call it. You can rinse and repeat that strategy and end up with 10 houses because all you do, you buy one. Even if it's your first house, you're living in there, you buy one house, price goes up over time. take out a mortgage against now the increase in value, use that to buy a second house. I'll tell you guys, because in here, I'm going to pay up on the money exactly how I did it.
As simple as it seems, no, I actually never thought about it. And so for me, I have a plan. I didn't expect to come out with a plan, but I came out with a plan. So I'm extremely happy. Thank you very much, Khalila. And thank you so much, Keisha. The information was presented in a very clear, understandable way. And I am grateful. This is the start of me investing in real estate. So guys, definitely join the Money Mission. You won't regret it. Take my word.
Real Estate for Beginners is available on demand or with a premium membership to the Money Mission community. Join now at moneymission.mn.co. The link is in the description.
How you doing?
I'm successful. How are you?
I'm good.
What's funny?
You said you're successful. What? That mean you got business?
Yes, I mind my business.
You probably too much to handle. You got a minute?
You got money?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I got money. What you want?
You got Cash App?
Nah, not Cash
App. PayPal?
What you need right now?
Venmo?
I don't really got no digital pay.
Zelle?
Nah.
Have a nice day.
Hey, bro.
This segment of Taking Stock is brought to you by Bulwark Insurance Agency, insurance made easy.
If there was a time to think about your future, to think about securing you and your family, to start that journey, that time is now with people you can trust. At Bulwark Insurance Agency, service is not what we do, it's who we are. We understand what it means to work together to exceed your expectations. Bulwark Insurance Agency. Insurance made easy.
Welcome back to Taking Stock. Let's start by shouting out all our early warmers. Let's see who's in the house. Lemoy says, hey, good night, money makers. We have Kish up, and Kish saying, so good to have the program back after a week break. I hope you all enjoyed your Emancipation Day and Independence Day celebrations. I watched it on TV. Kish again says, greetings from London. We have Raquel says, room full and meeting don't start. I love when you guys are already here waiting on the program. We have Nana Sense, greetings from far, far away as usual. Ingrid saying good night to all, checking in from Bull Bay, St. Andrew. Let's get this money. Anthony is in Portmore. Happy Time says greetings from Jamaica. Saban Henry Mandeville is represented. Roger says Philly in the house. Humble Boss says let's get this money. And Maurice says tuning in from St. Thomas in the East. Eager to hear where Kadeen's Midas Touch will go next, because I'll be there with him. Interesting. Let's get this money and lots of it too. Very, very interesting indeed. But like I said, tonight's show, we have to flip it and reverse it in the words of Mr. Elliott, because Kadeen is not ready yet. Kadeen has been traveling all day, and he says that he will be able to join us around 8:30. And because of that, we are actually going to start with the analyst segment. And so let me introduce our analyst for this evening. That is Clive Charlton from JMMB. Hi, Clive.
Hi, Khalila. How are you?
One of the viewers' favorite analysts. Uh-huh. Everybody always like when Clive come on, you know.
You're
a crowd favorite, Clive.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, so we have a few things to talk about on your list, and let's start with the whole situation with interest rates, capital adequacy requirements, and how it's related to dividend payments. What's going on there? Give us the update. Bring us up to speed.
Okay, yes. Now, you know, these are some topics we may have discussed over time, looking at different companies, you know, different events. But I think right now we're seeing more things tying into the whole issue of companies and dividend payment. And we know that there was one that was quite a bit topical recently, one of the largest companies in Jamaica, in the Caribbean, in the region, and really expanding rapidly. I would say rapidly, that's my term, right? But a lot has happened over the last several years. We know COVID, we've spoken about that extensively, and how it impacted the broader economy, global economy. Then, of course, there's this conflict that has impacted commodity prices, and prices have gone up. Financial companies in the US, that's what they trade, right? As a result of the inflationary some monetary policies globally. You know, there's an expansion in money supply. There's a process. We can look at that at a later date. But interest rate, in order to contain inflation as a result of that expansion in monetary supply, the monetary authorities globally in different countries, including Jamaica, have sought to increase interest rate, right? And there's a process. We can look at that another side, another time. But this has impacted financial companies in particular. Let me just quickly look at why. Interest rate goes up. Now, there's an inverse relationship between bonds and interest rate. Yeah? And it makes sense. If you lend money at, let's say, 10%, right? So you lend $1,000 at 10%, you are getting what? That's $100 per period, let's say per year, right?
Right.
And then someone else comes in to borrow money. Generally, interest rate is going up. Interest rate in the average economy is 12%. It means that 10% is generating less than what you can get on a 12% instrument, right? So the price of that bond will go down. The 10% bond will go down. So that's the inverse relationship between interest rate and bonds. As interest rate goes up, trends up in the economy, then bond prices will go down. That's the inverse relationship. Now, what assets do financial companies hold mostly? They hold financial assets, right? Not that they want to lock up their money into land, building, and all these type of assets. Banks are in the process of unlending money to make more money, right? And they facilitate the economic growth. So they don't lock up money in physical assets. They don't have factories, right? What they buy is financial instruments. What are these financial instruments? Banks take your money, they lend it out. They might structure a note and lend it to a particular company. These very complex arrangements over a period of time, and that gives rise to different types of financial assets or instruments, right? So imagine when a bank like NCBS, large bank, has trillions, perhaps trillions of dollars worth of assets, because they take all the hundreds of billions of deposits, they lend it out, they make money, they lend it out, they make money. So they're holding all these assets in their balance sheet, and interest rate trends up on average. The asset in their balance sheet goes down, the value. So you can see how it impacts the balance sheet. If your asset fall, your ability to generate further revenue is hampered also, or impacted negatively. Assets, right? Let's look at a real financial institution. Real meaning a company that has real tangible assets and produce real tangible goods. Your assets, your land, building, your tools, your raw materials, all of these are the value of your assets. The more you have is the more you can produce. Therefore, the potentially more revenue you can make. That's assets for a tangible, real company. For a financial company, assets, bonds, financial instruments, the more assets they have, the more potential revenue they can make. So you can see how a high interest rate has impacted financial companies, right? Particularly investment houses and banks, right? And the ability to generate revenue, that's one thing. Now, the global economy has been growing over the last several years, and there perhaps is a potential for increased conflict. So banks have to seek, and some banks, especially in the US, they have been taking risk or coming out of the financial crisis, right? So monetary authorities, in the Jamaica's case, BOJ, in the US, the Federal Reserve, they now have to find ways of ensuring that the massive collapse we had, then we don't have it again, especially with coming off COVID, and then this international conflict, and then the increased interest rate. So they now put into place various rules, regulation, and directives to guide financial institutions to ensure that they don't take undue risk that can jeopardize and throw an economy out of chaos. It has happened in 2008. Remember, the good thing is that Jamaica had strong regulatory practices beforehand, that we didn't buy these complex, very difficult financial instruments that was being traded globally in 2008, 2009. However, we are a small economy, so we have the regulatory now. There's an international convention, this called the Basel III or the Basel Committee, right?
Right. David's been telling us about that for quite some time now.
Exactly. And what they have done is international corporations as well as governments and different jurisdictions have come together post 2008 and said, how do we secure our financial entities? It's very complex. Even if you look at international shipping, we talk about financial companies, international shipping. When you're going to send a ship abroad, transporting hundreds of millions, maybe billions of dollars worth of goods on the high seas, potentially in a dangerous era where there's potential for war. I mean, look at the Russia-Ukraine conflict and this issue of grain, right? You have to insure that ship, insurance companies. Huh? So they know it's a financial company that is impacted by events, right? So you can see the complexity of the financial arrangements globally, right, involving banks, especially in the case of NCB, a bank that has a significant asset called Guardian Holding, right, that is impacted from different areas by everything that is happening globally. It has an impact. It threatens the company, right? The resilience of these companies is guaranteed through good management, prudency in how the companies are managed, yes, as well as through the regulatory authorities. So the point I'm raising, though, is that there is, of course, a high interest rate environment. We spoke about that and the impact on balance sheet assets, and the financial company and balance sheet and the ability to generate further revenue. We spoke about the Basel, three committee and how the set regulatory practices, particularly what we call capital reserves, right? Capital adequacy ratio, CAR, that's the term we use. And there are various others where they said what they call the risk weighted assets, right? You must retain, when NCB takes your money or any other bank, JMB, structure some instrument and you come and you buy it, right? There are guidelines as to how much they can off-lend to other entities and the risk associated with those lending, right? So based on the different risk structures that financial entities undertake by off-lending money or engaging in other products, based on the risk structures of these, they must retain a certain amount of money in cash or near cash, that in case people want money for some reason, they can get it, that there's no run on the bank. You notice that there are run on banks when people believe that a bank cannot pay them, right? When people and companies believe that they can't transact their everyday business, for example, the real productive company, the service companies, you and I who need cash every day, we go to the machine, if we need cash, so liquidity is important. So a bank must retain some amount of their capital in cash or near liquid form, meaning some instruments that are 1 month instrument, a company borrow money just for a month or 3 months, these are short term instruments, right? And they must retain that so they can have access to cash to satisfy liquidity requirements over any period of time. So Basel III set a global standard. And of course, individual companies can add to that, right? To ensure that their financial system is not.
So draw the line for us now, Clive. So Clive, draw the line for us now. How does that, banks being required to have more cash on hand, be more liquid, how does that affect the whole situation with interest rates?
Okay. Well, what it means, you know, if you take $1 billion in deposit, but you can only lend, let's say BOJ has a reserve requirement. I think it might have been 10%. I'm not sure. Don't hold me on that. Right. So that amount is kept with BOJ. No interest is paid on that. You can lend 90. If you have other requirements and based on a restructure, you have to retain a certain amount of cash. It means that perhaps you are lending 70% of that, but you're paying interest on 100%. So you are lending 700 million to make money on 700 million, then that's what I should say, but you are paying interest on $1 billion, right? And you have different type of instruments over different time period tenors, right? That pay different, has different interest rate structures, right? So that no impact how much the business banks can do and therefore how much revenue they can generate, right? So that will impact, what should I say now? That can impact, its ability to generate revenue. So that is based on the regulatory requirement. But the next impact is high interest rate. If the bank borrowed $100 billion, off-lend, let's say 700-800 million, so they have assets of probably 700-800 million, and then interest rate goes up, the value of that asset has fallen. So they don't no longer have value of $700 million holding in their balance sheet as assets. You know, that is money that is due to them over some period of time that they are generating revenue on. They have lower value. That again impacts their potential, just their balance sheet now and their reserve requirement, including capital adequacy requirements, but it also impacts their ability to generate further revenue. So it has a cascading effect, we can say, you know, and the financial institution's ability to generate revenue. So we have high interest rate environment, we have Basel requirement and other regulatory requirement, and then we have international accounting standard that again is trying to safeguard the financial system as well as individuals' wealth, right? For example, IFRS 17, which is an accounting standard, is not a regulatory pronouncement that is steeped into law, right? But it is a requirement that is globally accepted, and it's almost as good as a law, really, because it is expected that your structure your financial statements accordingly. But what that does now is adjust financial, particularly insurance. IFRS 17 affects mostly insurance companies. When an insurance company makes, I'm just speaking in layman terms and generally, when an insurance company collects premium, it generally records that as revenue. So when you look at the financial statement, it's a revenues, right? It has its cost, and then it invests some of this over a period of time and generates some amount of additional revenue. IFRS 17 is saying you cannot recognize, based on your risk profile, based on the type of insurance contracts written, you simply cannot recognize all of that as revenue. You have to apportion it over a period of time based on the length of these contracts. So if a company used to collect $1 billion of premium in a particular period of time, let's say over a 12-month period, and record that as revenue, that company may now have to record less as revenue. That will affect all the performance metrics. That is, in terms of, you might say, earnings per share, which is a popular metric, right? It will filter down to book value. That is the value of the shares itself, how it is measured through the balance sheet. That is assets minus liabilities, right? It can impact a various valuation metrics. So it means then that, and therefore, well, first, valuation metric. So the price, how you measure the value of a stock, will be adjusted also over any period of time, over a particular period of time. Over the infinite long run, we can say the value of the stock will remain the same, yeah, because you're looking at over an extended period of time, right? But certainly within a period, short term to medium term, that is in excess of a year, 2, 5, or 10 years, you may have to adjust the value of that stock. It means then, if I were looking to buy a stock in order to perhaps sell it over a 5 or 10 year period, I will have to adjust the value, the expected value on that stock over that 5 to 10 year period. And more than likely, it will be lower. That is all things remaining the same. So that's how interest rate, how it impacts balance sheet, regulatory requirements, for example, reserve requirements, right? And of course, Basel that speaks to risk-weighted reserves, right? As well as IFRS 17, which now has stipulates how certain type of revenues are recorded, measured first, right? All of those will impact how a company reports its financials, right? So the type of revenue we used to see, the type of profit we used to see, it may be adjusted somewhat downward. And I said downward, all things remaining equal. That is, let's say they are doing the same amount of business, right? Writing the same types of contracts. Of course, businesses are creative. As the economy grows, you know, the circumstances and needs changes. So more than likely, and as the global economy grows, and of course, Jamaica's economy is growing, we see that, right? We're expecting these very same entities to do well, even increase business over time. So I'm not saying that revenue will fall. I'm just saying all things being equal, we are constant. We expect some adjustments, and that could impact, at least in the short term, the valuation on these companies. Right? Now,
interesting.
Yes. Now, as a result of companies, in particular financial companies, generating lesser revenue and lesser profit as a result of their balance sheet, their valuation being impacted, especially let's speak to the high interest rate environment, it means that a company's ability to generate cash or to generate profit in order to pay dividends might be impacted. As a matter of fact, it is impacted. because we have seen that several financial companies in particular have either discontinued finitely in the interim dividend payment, have adjusted dividend payments downward. And some new companies just recently have announced, for example, Access Financial, their last announcement, they have declared a dividend. Their prior announcement, they did not declare a dividend. Jamaica Stock Exchange just recently met and did not declare and chose not to declare a dividend. Right? So we can see how that has impacted the market space, not just post-COVID, global commodity prices, which increase risks, but also the high interest rate environment, implementation of Basel IV, which has increased that rate, and of course, IFRS 17, which has instructed some adjustment to how revenue, particularly insurance companies. And what is of interest to note is that even though IFRS 17 speaks specifically to insurance companies, it is not restricted to insurance companies, because products that has that type of life in casualty product attached to it, for example, a mortgage, maybe or could be impacted to a lesser degree, yes, but could be impacted. So any financial institution that offers mortgages that has that type of casualty insurance attached to that mortgage, or even some regular products, you might say higher purchase companies, say credit cards, has this type of casualty product attached to it, you know, in case there's something happened to you, they have an insurance portion to your credit card that will pay off the outstanding balance. Higher purchase companies, any product that is sold by any company that has this part attached to it will be impacted by, can or may be impacted by IFRS 17. And it is really to protect the markets, because financial markets are very, the entire economy is very heavily dependent on the proper functioning of the financial markets. I just think about it, what money is. It's not just about money in the hard sense of it being able to buy goods and services, right? That's how we individually we see it. But it's a very complex system that facilitates trade, facilitates production, facilitate exchange. If I want to cut your lawn and you want to pay me, it's a financial transaction, right? And somehow, in some way, the financial institutions impact that transaction, that arrangement, that simple arrangement. So it's really a very complex but very sensitive system that has to be protected and monitored at all times. And this is why, even in Jamaica, we may see an increased watch. And, well, we have seen it really, right? On everything financial, everything within the financial sector, individuals, companies, how they operate, the persons who run companies. There's the fit and proper offered by FSC, which has a profile of individuals who are employed to financial companies that must be completed, and it's called a fit and proper. So they must be considered fit and proper to be employed and to engage in certain positions or job function within any financial entity.
We have quite a few questions from our viewers. So let's take some of these questions. Yes. Orville wants to know, with all of these high interest rate environments that we're in, who benefits? Because some, if not all, banks' interest income is affected.
Right. That's a good question. No one benefits. I can't say anyone benefits because it slows down the economy. We can see easily how it slows down the economy, right? 5% versus 9%, 10% versus 15%, right? Who benefits? No one benefits. But maybe in the long run, everyone benefits. In the long run, in the short term, certainly. It is designed to protect the economy. For example, it is designed, at least based on classical economic theory, to slow down the economy in the sense that temporarily slow down the economy so the economy can grow at an acceptable pace later on. What do I mean by slow down the economy? It's a complex process, but let me see if I can simplify it for you. When there's a lot of cash in the economy, when business is doing good and they are making tremendous amount of profit and there's a lot of business activity, people are making income, people have more money to spend, people begin to compete. And if production cannot keep a pace of the wealth of people growing, people are going to compete to buy goods and services, meaning people are now demanding more luxurious cars from dealers, not from one time, that's a what, the second-hand market, or they call it deportees. And people are now buying brand new cars out of the factory, right? Luxury vehicles are no more available in Jamaica. These cars are pressure on the Jamaican dollar. These are heavy demand for cars, pollution, parts, gas, that is energy. So all of these things causes inflation. In order to slow down inflation, that is to put a curb on some of these activities that is driving inflation, the regulator authority increased interest rate, right, to slow it down. So the idea, it's seen negative in the short term, but it is really designed to slow down the economy sufficiently that all the different parts come in sync, and then now we can have, should I call it, a controlled, acceptable growth going forward. So in the short term, perhaps I could say no one benefits, but it is designed that, or it is such that in the long term, everyone benefits.
Next question comes from Nicola, and it's on a different topic. So Nicola has been observing what's going on in the United States. Their credit ratings were recently downgraded. So she says, hello, with the downgrade of America credit rating from AAA to AA rating, how is this going to affect the Jamaica stock market? The debt ceiling in America is going up. Do you have any insight on that, Clive?
Well, yes, I could speak broadly on it, yes. Well, just like Jamaica, I mean, what you have experienced over the last 40 years or so, we were borrowing. And when you borrow, what happens? You now have an accumulated debt. Your debt burden gets heavier and heavier. And if your economy cannot keep a pace in terms of production to generate enough revenue, and remember, it's the government that pays on these debt. So if the government can't collect taxes, which is dependent on production, efficient production, then we're going to have an accumulated debt burden. The fact is that the U.S., being a global economy, resilient economy, a very creative economy, can more handle a higher and higher debt ceiling or government borrowing. But a big part of the U.S. is that there's a level of liberalism in the financial system and sector, and financial institutions are at times, at least pre-2008, we're at liberty to create complex financial instruments. As in, we talk about these asset-backed, some of them are asset-backed mortgage structures of 2008, right? That eventually cause a collapse of the financial system or a collapse of many of these entities. In the US recently, we saw the collapse of two or three banks, financial institutions, and the feds had to come in and shore them up. This is what has caused Fitch in particular. Fitch, I believe, is headquartered or domiciled in Britain, I believe, right? Not Moody's and not Standard and Poor, right? I'm not sure where Moody's domiciled, right? Standard and Poor, certainly US. And they downgraded the US government, just like they would have downgraded the instruments and the debt instruments issued by the government of Jamaica or coming out of Jamaica.
Right. So let me just interject here, Clive. So viewers, you may be familiar with this whole issue of downgrades and credit ratings for countries because of what Jamaica has been through, especially when we went through the whole cycles with the IMF. And every time you hear news about Jamaica get downgraded, and then in more recent years, it was all about upgrades, which is awesome because we have three major international credit ratings agencies, and Clive just referenced them. We have Standard & Poor's, we have Moody's, and we have Fitch. So the highest credit rating that you can have is AAA. Then from AAA, you go to AA, then A, and then even within the bands, you have positive and negative, like you get A+, A-, and so on. And then you go into the B range. Jamaica is, I think, somewhere in the B range now, which is pretty good from where we used to be. We used to be like in junk bond status. So America moving from AAA to AA+, they're still at investment grade, but it affects their ability to borrow. Does it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it does.
Pretty good.
It does. It's risk. It's called risk. And what it means that they may have to pay more to borrow. And as they increase the debt ceiling, they have to pay, but borrow more nominally and pay you know, overseas lenders will demand a higher interest rate, and that will put more fiscal pressure on the country, and that again can have a cascading or, you know, replicative effect in the broader economy. So it's a very fairly complex, but on the base level, fairly, you can see how it impacts all levels of the economy. And I think that is what the US could, but maybe there's a level of arrogance because the same thing happens to other economies. You know, so it can happen, it should, you know. Their ability though to bounce back is different. Because they have but sooner or later though, we may see more as credit agencies get comfortable or get more unbiased in their ratings. We may see first world countries being downgraded a little bit more. And remember, the international global landscape is changing, you see. We know about colonialism. We know the control that the quote-unquote West and the Western financial institution has over the global economy. Global trade is powerful. Really look at that, right? Shipping, you name it. As a matter of fact, this impasse, I would say, our issue with Russia and the West has really highlighted for persons who did not know the power of the West and the level of control they have over every institution, global institution, including sports that I thought was excluded from political harangues, right? Sports. But international shipping, in fact, many of the insurance, global insurance companies are Western domiciled, Western based, Western owned. And many of them have stopped insuring Russian ships or ships that trade, carry Russian goods. That's the power and the impact. So the point I'm raising though is that as a result of that, we heard about BRICS. We heard about China's Belt and Road. We know that China has established this development bank that several companies, including at one point, German government had signed on to. We know Belt and Road, which is a trading route initiative, initiated by China. Italy had signed on to it, but Meloni, the new president, is a little bit hesitant. Now they start that they might withdraw. But the point I'm raising is that the international global environment is shifting and changing outside, out of favor of the US and the West. So it means that we may see additional international rating agencies outside of the Western ones, which are Standard & Poor's, Moody's and Fitch. And we may see even these entities having the courage to know, I would say, unbiasedly rate these first world countries. And it's not the first time that the US was downgraded. I'm not sure which one. It might have been Moody a few years ago. I think it was during Obama's time when there was a crisis between the Republican within the House of Congress, budgetary impasse, and they couldn't come to an agreement. I think so. It might have been Moody during Obama's tenure. So it's interesting. So
this is
that
very
Fitch
interesting,
this
guys.
Time.
Jamaica, and countries like us aren't the only countries that get downgraded. But according to Clive, there's been some bias in the international credit ratings agencies. And now we're starting to see where they're getting braver and bolder to give, you know, their true opinions of what countries like the United States are doing. So part of the reason for the downgrade, probably the reason for the downgrade, America borrowed an extra $1 trillion. Trillion in... How many zero that? 12 zeros?
And it's not Jamaican.
An extra trillion US dollars.
Yes.
So, they have a debt issue.
Yes,
debt problem.
Exactly.
Issue meaning problem, debt problem. Yes. So, yeah, a lot going on in the United States. And right. So think of it on a personal level, think of it as the US losing points on their credit score. Right. That's a good way for you to think of it in terms of comparison. So we have another question, Clive. By the way, viewers, I am stretching with Clive. So this segment is going over time because we're still waiting on Kadeen. I got the last update we got from him was about 10 minutes ago. He was going through customs. So I know that he's really trying his best to be with us this evening. And we're going to give him as much time as he needs because, you know, it wasn't his fault. The flight was delayed. We did try to book a different show at the last minute this evening. It didn't work out. So this is what we're going with for this evening. He does want to do the interview and he's trying his best to clear as quickly as possible. So we have a question here from Shelly Ann, and she wants to know about Fosrich. So Shelly-Ann says, question for the analysts. What do they think about first rich rights issues still being above stock price? Since the announcement, the price is just falling more.
Yes. Okay. Well, I didn't do any. Let me see if I can pull up some metric on first rich here. But here's the thing with first rich. First rich has done well. I mean, there are quite a few of the listed companies have really rewarded shareholders, right? And not just in terms of price. I mean, price must reflect growth, real growth in the company. And the company has grown, creatively managed. And they do have prospect for growth. But the company, we want to separate the company from the stock, right? The company is the entity that employs people, engages production, doing its thing, you know, to generate revenue and profit, etc. But the stock is what you and I buy. The stock is what you and I buy. Sometimes when you look at the fundamentals of the company, that is when you look at the actual financial results that are written in that document, and you look at the numbers and you use those numbers, either in the cash flow statement, maybe the P&L and the balance sheet to value the company, you may find out that it is trading at a value. It is trading, the stock is trading at a value higher than what the company is valued. So we're separating the two. The company, the real entity that produces and generates revenue, and the stock, what we trade and how we value the stock, right? And many times that is what is happening. Let me see if I can find the metric. I should have them right here. But I believe, though, that the first rich rights issue, that I would believe that they had negotiated with several buyers beforehand, and they had their buyers before, and they had agreed at a particular price. More than likely, they would have done that, you see. But the market, though, is post stock split, right? The market has a tendency to drive prices up after a stock split, yeah, and we need to think about that, right? So I believe that it was already overpriced. Right, let me see if I can find the valuation here. But it is overpriced. Let me see. Fastridge. You know, I have a bag of information here and my side not so good. So okay, here it is. Right. Okay, good. Fastridge. It is trading at a price to earnings ratio. These figures were calculated using Friday gone. Last week, every week, Friday's prices. It is trading at a PE ratio of 37.9 times. What does that mean? P over E, the price over the earnings per share. We can buy a stock unit, for example, for Fastrich. We can, as at last Friday, we paid $2.17 for that one stock unit. And you can say, okay, First, which is trading at $2.17. For argument's sake, comparison, I'm just using a number here, right? Future Energy Fesco is trading. You can buy a first rate stock at $2.17 Jamaican dollars. You can buy Fesco at $3.94 Jamaican dollars. Or you could say you could buy Cargo Handlers at $19 Jamaican, right? You could say that. That's what you pay for one stock unit. However, we want to take it one step deeper. Rather than say $2.17 for a stock unit versus, in the case of Cargo Handlers, $19 per stock unit, what we want to do is measure this value, the $2.17, not against a stock unit, the $19, not against a stock unit, but the $2.17 against the profit it earned. Can we pay $2.17 per stock? So you ask yourself, what is the profitability of that stock? What profit did it generate? As same thing with Cargo Handlers. What profit did it generate? So if you look at the earnings per share of Fastrich, it has an earnings per share of close price. And 12 months. Okay, I don't have the earnings per share here. But here's the point. $2.17 divided by what number to get 37, roughly almost a PE of 30, of 2.17 divided by 37.9. So it has an earnings per share of probably about 5 cents. Call it nearly 6 cents, right? So $2.17 divided by 6 cents, what do you get? 37.9. In other words, what it is saying, that you're paying $2.17 for a profit of 6 cents. Cargo handlers, you're at $19, you're paying, and its PE is 25.97. Call that 26, round it up to 26. Cargo handlers, you're paying $19 for a profit of 73 cents. So $19 the price divided by the earnings per share, the profit per share is 25 or 26 times. So a PE, price over the earnings per share, is 25 times, as opposed to fast rich, right? $2.17, even though the price is nominally cheaper, the fact is that the profit on that stock is so much lower, right? So the higher the PE, all else being equal, the higher the PE is, the more you're paying. The price to earnings means that you're paying 37 times the earnings per share. That's what it means. So usually when a stock is trading at 10 times, a PE of 10 times, it means that you're paying 10 times the profit. Whatever the stock price, if the stock price is $10, the earnings per share is $1. The profit on that same stock is $1. So you're paying a PE of 10.
The price and for is our newbies, Clive, is that good or bad?
Okay. The higher the PE means that you're paying relatively more for the stock. And a PE of 9 on Fosrich of almost 38 times means that you're paying 38 times the profit for that stock price. As opposed to when you look at the weighted average for that industry and a cargo handlers, the PE is 25 times, call it 26 times. You're paying 26 times the profit on cargo handlers at a PE of 26 times. If you look at Future Energy, you're paying a PE of 17.4, means that you're paying 17.4 times the profit on that same stock unit. So the lower the PE is, the better the price.
Well, the point I'm raising is that cost, which is Clive. Yeah. So I hope that answers your question. I think it was Shelly Ann who was asking the question. We actually have Kadeen backstage now, and I know that you know he's been through a lot today. Hopefully his internet holds up just like mine. Where I am, my internet is kind of not the best either. So let's wrap it up with you, Clive. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to wrap up the analyst segment and go to Kadeen Mears in just a moment. But first, we have a market recap.
This segment of Taking Stock was brought to you by Bulwark Insurance Agency, insurance made easy.
If there was a time to think about your future, to think about securing you and your family, to start that journey, that time is now with people you can trust. At Bulwark Insurance Agency, service is not what we do. It's who we are. We understand what it means to work together to exceed your expectations. Bulwark Insurance Agency, insurance made easy.
Hey moneymakers, join the KRM fam with our official merch. Get it now at KalilaReynolds.com. Let's get this money.
The JSE Combined Index gained just over 1,000 points last week. 123 stocks traded across the main and junior markets for the week ending Friday, August 4, 2023. 53 made gains, 56 lost value, and 14 stayed the same. 209 million shares changed hands on the Jamaican dollar market, valued at $614 million. Trans-Jamaican Highway 8% was the week's most traded stock. It took up 53% of market volume with 113 million shares trading. The stock lost 88 cents to open Monday at $1.48. The stock was also the week's biggest loser, down 37%. Sagicor Select Funds Financial traded at the second highest. The stock gained 2 cents to open this week at 46 cents. And Trans-Jamaican rounded out last week's most traded with 7 million shares changing hands. The stock lost 8 cents to open Monday at $2.51. Now let's see who had the biggest gains for the week. Margaritaville Turks USD was the market's biggest gainer, up 25%. The stock opened Monday at 11 cents US. medical disposables and supplies gained almost 19% to start the new week at $4.85. And CAC 2000 is up 17% to open the week at $5.98. On the losing side now, JMMB 7.25% was the week's second biggest loser after Trans-Jamaican 8%. The stock lost 75 cents to open Monday at $2.12. And SOS was down 24%, closing the week at $2.24. Over on the Trinidad and Tobago Stock Exchange, the composite index was mostly stable last week. Grace Kennedy was the most traded stock. The stock's price remained unchanged to open this week at $3.40 TT. Ansa Makal was the market's biggest gain, up 7% to open this week at $57.98 TT. And on the losing side, JMMB fell nearly 4% to open Monday at $1.34 TT. Over in the US, the Dow Jones lost 1% last week, while the S&P 500 fell 2% and the Nasdaq fell 3%. Motorists saw an increase at the pumps last week, with gas and diesel prices up $4.50. In foreign exchange, it took an average $155.52 Jamaican to purchase $1 last Friday. That's 16 cents less than a week before. Meanwhile, it took an average $116.78 Jamaican to purchase $1. One British pound cost on average $198.55 Jamaican, and you could buy €1 for $172.86 Jamaican on average. Finally, on the crypto markets, Bitcoin prices were mostly stable over the past 5 days, trading at $29,087 US on Monday. Ethereum was also stable, trading at $1,832 US on Monday. This segment of Taking Stock, The Analyst, is brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart, and Profit Jump Starter. Disclaimer. Hurricane tips are brought to you by CG United. It's good like that.
Go to repairs or replacement if you don't get all of this up to scratch. Property maintenance is essential and a condition of most property insurance coverage. Your insurer can deduct wear and tear from your settlement if it is not up to scratch. So help them to help you so that in the event of serious damage from a hurricane or some other disaster, you won't lose out on money that could have gone to your repairs. And that was your hurricane insurance tip brought to you by CG United.
Hurricane tips were brought to you by CG United. It's good like that.
Okay, did we hear the hurricane tip or not? Type in the comments. So my internet is behaving slowly. Tonight is a comedy of errors, I swear. One of those nights now where it's when things go wrong, everything goes wrong at the same time. So let me do over your hurricane tip. All right, let's brought to you by CG United before I introduce our guest. A home in good condition is a home insured for its value. Imagine not getting a full payout in the event of a disaster because you didn't maintain your property. Loose guttering, unsecured doors, damaged roof tiles, etc. Fix it because you will lose out on money that could go to repairs or replacement if you don't get all of this up to scratch. Property maintenance is essential and a condition of most property insurance coverage. Your insurer can deduct wear and tear from your settlement if it's not up to scratch. So help them help you so that in the event of serious damage from a hurricane or some other disaster, you won't lose out on money that could have gone to your repairs. And that was your hurricane tip brought to you by CG United. And now it is time to introduce the man of the hour, our special guest who is traveling from far to be with us this evening, Kadeen Mears. This will explain why you're in darkness. Hi, Kadeen, and welcome back to Taking Stock.
Hi, Kalila. It's good to be
joining
here.
Joining us from your car.
I know. Sorry to be late. I was supposed to be in Jamaica 2 hours ago, but I got delayed. Nevertheless, I can't miss Taking Stock, so I'm here.
Well, thank you so much for honoring the commitment and still making the effort to be with us this evening. So a lot of people have been waiting on this interview. I saw a message earlier from Henika. Henika said, Kadeen brought me here tonight as I'm always having a clash with my time on Tuesdays. But, you know, she had to make it to watch you. So you are the star tonight. Because it'll come with a big announcement out of the blue. And it caught a lot of people off guard. So let's hear it from you yourself. Why did you leave Dollar? Why did you resign as CEO?
Well, Kalila, you did a summary video. Well, first of all, I want to say that I watch your videos and the way you break down, you know, financial knowledge. Sometimes I don't understand exactly what's happening in the market myself. And the way that you break it down, it really does help. You did a summary recently. You did a video recently, TikTok. Somebody forwarded to me that I've read a lot of articles and heard what everybody had to say, you know, even post me releasing, you know, a statement. And I think what you released really summarized what really took place. And so I'll just confirm that, you know, the decision to leave Dollar wasn't an overnight decision, as I said before. In the statement, and what you would have noticed over the last couple of months, you know, with the we put in a deputy CEO, you know, we've been making a lot of changes internally, corporate governance wise. We had new shareholders coming as well, with big backing. You'd see in the media that Supreme Ventures came in, Mayberry came in, and these guys came in with capital as well. I think the commitment that was released was about $5 billion in funding, which will solve a lot of dollars problem for continued growth. Now, the decision to leave, for me, was a personal decision. I know a lot of people would have known me since Dollar's IPO. The truth is I've been in the financial service industry, banking and finance, for probably 16 years. I've been doing microfinance as an entrepreneur for 10 years now. July 14 was my birthday. I turned 34. I've been doing money lending since I was 24 after I left NCB. So it's been 10 years that I've been at this. And at some point, you know, you have to determine what keeps you driven. And it was a tough decision. You know, of course, my team members would have been disappointed with the decision or surprised. Likewise, my directors and shareholders. But it was a personal decision to now, you know, take the next step in my, you know, my dreams of, you know, creating this environment that fosters growth with entrepreneurs and with equity and everything that I was doing. So, you know, handing in that resignation, you know, was a sad moment for everybody, including myself. However, what I'd say is that this is public knowledge as well. I have 20% of the company, which is over $1 billion in stocks. So having over $1 billion in stocks and sitting on the board, I also will ensure that, you know, the company, you know, stays vibrant and continues to grow on the path that it was growing, you know, before I was an executive. I'm still a part of the company. I'm just not in an executive role. I'm a non-executive director of the company, just the same way. And we have built out a very strong team from our interim CEO, our CFO. You know, our last earnings call, we had everybody on that call. I didn't even do much talking. We had our Guyana country manager, ultra financier, CEO. We had our CFO. We had our the deputy CEO, of course. And these people know the business inside out. They've been in it as long as I have. These people are people who I handpicked. These people are people who are smarter than I am as well. So, you know, just to kind of simmer, you know, the concerns that been going around. I'm heavily vested in dollar just the same way. Even though I have Dequity, which has other portfolio companies, similar to Berkshire that owns Warren Buffett's company that owns a percentage of Apple, which is about 50% of their portfolio. Dollar for Dequity is probably majority of our holdings, as this is probably the largest of the two public equity companies that we've invested in. So I hope that kind of, you know, put some more meat around, you know, what was being circulated.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I first heard the news, right, I first saw that original press release and I was like, oh, good for Kadeem. You know, you sold your company, took it to IPO, you're living the dream, made your millions. You could now retire if you wanted to, but you also have your other companies. That was my initial thought, especially since I think I've gotten to know you a little bit on a personal level over the past year, because, you know, we meet up at events, we hang out sometimes and so on. I think I kind of gotten a feel of what you stand for. So that was my initial thought. But then everybody started making a big deal about this garden leave and saying, what happened?
I think of everything that had happened, I think people were just more concerned about the term garden leave. And I think that's really what, because, you know, all of my friends are they're like, you know, what is a garden leave? I'm like, well, I just learned about that word as well. You know, I had to Google it and I said, oh, well, this is something that is normally done for, you know, an executive in a company. They'll relieve you of your roles while they deal with the transition because you're a high level executive. So, you know, but it would have led to speculations, you know, whether I was forced out or whether I was asked to resign, which neither of those were the case. So that's especially the main reason why I decided to, you know, put out, you know, my statement to kind of make it very clear to the public exactly what took place.
So speaking of exactly what took place as well, and the whole issue about whether you were forced out. So it seems there were two versions of that press release, because after I released my video, other people started bringing my attention to another statement that was put out that I hadn't seen. But when I checked my email now, I realized that I did indeed receive two versions of a press release. And one of the versions, and this is out there now in the public because this went out. I don't know if it was erroneous or what happened, why that went out. But in one of the versions, it said that you were demanding a 200% increase in salary, and that's the reason for the separation, that dollar just couldn't meet that, and that was outrageous, and they couldn't do that. Is that true?
Well, I heard that statement, and this is what happens when you're out there in the public. There's always people who will, you know, try to put a spin on a story. But I've heard that version before, and I asked my friend, if you have a CEO who grew a company and, you know, it's basically on its way to making, you know, $500 million a year profit, and that executive say, hey, I want you to raise my salary, I'm pretty sure I would have gotten that raise. So, you know, you kind of have to decipher what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. You know, Dequity Dollar is also a dividend paying company. I have heavy stakes in the company as well from a shareholder perspective. So if it was an internal matter, I'm sure that my directors or shareholders would have ensured that I didn't leave, because nobody wants, you know, it to affect, you know, the perception or the viewed stability of the company or even the stock price of the company. So if that was the case, put it this way, they would have given me a raise.
So you're saying that was not the case?
No, that was not the case.
Okay, because it's not, it coming like you thought $200 was Jamaica House. Politicians getting 200% raise.
Well, if everybody getting a raise, I should have demanded a raise just the same way.
Hey. I do not think it would have been unjustified based on, you know, what you've done with the company.
Exactly.
You're on record now as saying that was not the case, and you're moving mm-hmm. on to other things. So let's focus on those other things. Explain what exactly is Dequity Capital. When did you start it, and what are your plans for it?
Okay, so basically I started Dequity, I would say around 2018. And basically what I wanted to accomplish was, even though we label it as a private equity company, it's really an equity holding company, like a diverse holding company, which approach is kind of different from a private equity company. The objective is really is not to take ownership of entrepreneurs' company, but rather to take an associate stake in their company and grow with them. So that is where my passion is currently. Traditionally, in the equities market, in order to get certain forms of capital, you have to, give up control. We wanted to change that narrative and keep the entrepreneurs in the driver's seat, build that governance structure, formalize whatever business idea that they have, and work on it and put it in a form of business model that is scalable. So we're building not only the business, but we're also building the entrepreneurs as well. So we believe that each successful entrepreneur can carry along 5 trying entrepreneurs, and we can keep that, multiple growing. So and for me, that's very important. That is how you will change an economy, provide jobs. When I started Dollar, I was the only employee. Now we have in Jamaica clearly over 50 employees in Jamaica, and in Guyana as well we have a lot of employees. So we've just out of an idea spurred job creation, it spurred investment opportunity, it spurred inspiration for a lot of entrepreneurs who DM me all the time and say, this is an inspiration, keep doing what you're doing. They're watching it, they like what's going on. And for me, I aspire to inspire. And when I see that, my actions are delivering a certain impact, that fuels my passion a lot more than just, okay, I'm an executive, the company is doing great, and it's all for me. So what we want to do with Dequity is to, create that wealth creation opportunity, bring other companies to the stock exchange through my experience, not only for investors to invest for the medium or long term, but for entrepreneurs to access capital at, valuations that they normally wouldn't be able to access in the private market. So it's a very simple business model. It's emulated from like a Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway business model. We invest and grow with these companies for the long term. We're not looking to flip companies. No matter how great the opportunity for, real returns, we won't invest if we don't believe in the long-term future of the company. So what we want to do is to grow companies to a level to sustainably pay dividends, to sustainably grow stock price, and for 2024 and beyond, because right now we'd have to be doing a lot of groundwork with the team at Dequity, along with my board of directors and shareholders on that side. But really what we want to deliver is we want to help 2 entrepreneurs to list on the Jamaica Stock Exchange every year. So we want to list 2 portfolio companies every year over the next 10 years.
Wow.
So over the last 10 years, I've done what I've done in the last 10 years, from 24 to 34. So from 34 to 44, what I want to promise is that for every year, I will be growing with an entrepreneur listing their company on the stock exchange, make them have the feeling that I had when I slid that that thing downtown at Jamaica Stock Exchange and list on the stock exchange and feel that, you know, you have a support system. So an entrepreneur who did it from the ground up, from nothing, to where he is today, and can understand what it is like. Somebody who's relatable, because one thing to get an investor, but when you get an investor who can relate to situations of, you know, bootstrapping a company and struggling with a company, it's a different feeling, you know, as the entrepreneur. So that's really where my passion is right now, Khalilah. And I think at Dollar, I have a very strong team, and it has given, you know, other team members now the opportunity to run my company that I've, you know, built from ground up. And the truth is, Khalilah, every time we would have a management meeting, I would always say to my staff, but probably they never took it so literal. I always said to them, you guys have to push harder. One day you guys are going to be the CEO for Dollar. Somebody going to have to take over one day, you know, but they probably never took it that literal. I never knew that it would come so quickly, but that is the truth. You know, life is short. If you're passionate about things, you have to go for it now. You can't delay it, you know, for whatever reasons that might come up. And there's going to be, it's just natural. You know, I'm in the financial service industry. You know how the market is now. All kind of things always going on. There's always going to be something coming at me. And those are called challenges. And, you know, once I can continue to overcome those challenges, continue to inspire entrepreneurs, build more entrepreneurs. I don't want to be the only successful entrepreneur that drive a nice car and take care of my family and buy mother a house. I want to know that I also give other entrepreneurs, you know, that support to do the same as well. So that's kind of where my passion is.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So how many companies do you have in the portfolio now apart from Dollar?
All right. So right now we have about 8 portfolio companies. We actually had taken a 20% stake in iCreate back when, as you know, they've been going through their ups and downs. We have a real estate development company.
You still have that 20% or no in iCreate?
I think it was diluted a bit down because they did they raised some capital for an acquisition that they wanted to do. But us, and I say us as in, you know, Dequity and myself, investing in even iCreate was, we invested, I think, $50 million. And it was more about the entrepreneur and giving the entrepreneur an opportunity to change the direction in which their company was headed, you know. But what I've realized over time is that when I'm running a company 9 to 5, I'm running Dollar, I can't help the entrepreneurs as much as I would want to help them because I have to be focusing on my job. So if I have portfolio companies now, I can sit with these entrepreneurs, spend time, find out what the problems are in these companies, you know, be active, you know, directors, be active. You know, what you'll notice going forward is that I'll take more of a chairman approach to portfolio companies that we have, so that it can give me more oversight and work closer with the operator of the company. So we have a development company, we have iCreate, we have Royal Medical in SAF, we have a hospital in SAF, we recently purchased.
Before you move on, so still on iCreate, so as a large investor in iCreate, what do you think about where the company is now and the direction they're moving?
So here's the thing. I just took a vacation, you know, after everything took place. But it's really now for me to refocus, sit with the entrepreneurs of these portfolio companies and do a deep dive into, you know, what's the core problems. Because it's one thing to have high expectations of the owner, operator, entrepreneur, but it's the next thing for them to have that support, mentorship, people who's gonna get hands-on in the business with them to help figure out what the problem is. Because some of these business models are sound business models, but sometimes entrepreneurs need more than just money in their company. They're going to need somebody who can come in and help. So for me, now that I'd have more time on my hands, what you'll see is that a lot of these portfolio companies, including dollar, because now I can take an approach of not working in dollar, but working on dollar. And this gives me a bigger view of, you know, how can we scale these portfolio companies now? And how can we, you know, put this way of scaling the business in a form that, you know, the entrepreneurs or the CEOs of these portfolio companies can grab it and run with it and know that we're giving them the support.
Are you satisfied with how iCreate is currently being run?
For me, what I think is, you know, Tyrone, for example, entrepreneurs need support. And you can't just sit around and expect that, you know, this one person is going to, like, a company is not made. Dollar is not, you know, Kadeen Mears alone. Dollar is a full team of people from a board level to a management level, to all of the stakeholders. And I think that if there is a break or there is some disconnect with the different levels, then there and there's no synergy, then you're going to have a breakdown in terms of what the goal for the company is. I wouldn't have invested in the company if I never believed in the company. So I hope that answers the question. And I do think that the company still has significant potential, but I do also think that it needs some support as well.
Fair enough. I didn't expect you to say, you know, to throw them under the bus as somebody who is invested. All right. So moving on to some of the other companies that you're invested in, you were mentioning the hospital in, is it Savlamar? I know it's in Westmoreland somewhere.
Correct. So we've invested in a private hospital in Sav. We've also recently acquired more popular this side of town, Royal Winchester Surgical and Medical Institute on Winchester Road. So we did 100% acquisition of that facility and operation recently. So we're looking to merge those two private medical companies together, which would, you know, be providing probably the largest healthcare system across Jamaica. And we have a lot of ideas for healthcare just the same way. But this, as again, is going to take a lot of attention. And if we plan to list this company when we, you know, do our amalgamation and merging, then, you know, this is going to take a lot of work. You can't expect an entrepreneur to do it alone. They're going to need a team that's going to come with, you know, the support and the experience to help them to get there. So we can look forward to that for next year as well.
Next year already. Nice. Love to see it.
Definitely. As I said, we want to list two companies per year. We have a
so that would be starting popular. Next year, not this year.
Correct. Next year. So what the aim now is to just get the groundwork done for these portfolio companies. We have Elite Concept and Solution, which we have, I think, a 30% stake in. They do all of the major printing, you name it, everything for Sumfest. And these are entrepreneurs that have been grinding and doing the work. They don't have the popularity this side of the town, Kingston. They want to scale their business. These businesses, some of them are doing amazing. If they have the right structure, if they have the right marketing, these are companies that your listeners, Kalila, will be happy to invest in if these companies ever go public. And I believe in performing companies that have the potential to pay some dividends and have some potential to grow in terms of, you know, the stock pricing. So you can look at our website and you can see the rest of portfolio companies, but that's basically the business model and where I'm headed next.
So for entrepreneurs who are watching right now and thinking, maybe I can approach Dequity, is there a particular profile of business that you're looking for investment? It's certain industries. What are you looking for from an entrepreneur or from a company?
So there isn't specific industries, but there's a specific profile of the entrepreneur that we're looking for. We're looking for entrepreneurs who are, you know, grassroots, entrepreneurs who are extremely passionate, who are willing to put in the work. We're looking for companies that have the ability to scale. And when I say that, I mean that it's not just that you're servicing, you know, one small market, but we can see where this company can service the entire company country. We can look at other Caribbean countries to scale these type of businesses. There's no specific industries, but what I can say is if it's in an industry that we're already in, what we'll probably look to do is merge it with a portfolio company that we already have and help both entrepreneurs to work together to build a bigger company. But if it's in the tech space, if it is in the marketing space, if it is in the, there are so many different industries now, whatever space it is in, you can visit our page, Dequity Capital or Dequity Group on Instagram. Website is dequitygroup.com. You can always shoot us an email with your, just tell us about, you don't have to send us any business plan. Tell us, if you had 5 minutes to tell somebody about your business and what you do, just send an email to us. Once it sparks our attention, well, you can definitely get a meeting with us.
Awesome. I love that. So let's take some questions from the viewers. They've been coming in. Devon wanted to know. So going back to Dollar, he said, so does this mean no more takeover bid for Access?
You'd have to ask the new executive team about that one. what I can say is, which is public information, is that Dollar now has access to a lot of capital with the new shareholders. So, you know, potential for growth is significant. I think you got another question there, Kalila.
Oh, sorry. All right. So Lanestra. No, it's my internet is glitching because it's moving slow. And so I'm clicking on things and the wrong thing is coming up. Anyway, so Lanestra said, as a shareholder, I never saw this coming. And then that was followed up by Natoya, who said, but why now? Why so sudden? So meaning your resignation. So it kind of caught people by surprise.
Yeah, it would always have been sudden. Even if I left next year or next 3 years, it would have been sudden. But if you were reading the place from before, us putting in place a deputy CEO and all of that, then you would have realized that there was something in the play even prior to my resignation.
Okay, so we had to read between the lines. We have some more comments, but like I said, I'm having some internet issues here. It's the problem I have whenever I travel is not quite that stable. A lot of great comments coming your way, Kadeen. Leon said, JSC better endorse you ASAP. We have DS Electronics, and they said, beautiful mind. DS Electronics said, impressive. Rasheen said, love it. Kirk M said, love the mindset. Leon again said, iCreate needs to update their trajectory because Dequity is doing both VC and financial consulting work. Let me get back into the live questions and the live comments. I see some people saying, yes, please help iCreate. So quite a few comments on that one as well. Okay, here we go. Kyle wants to know.
I think silent when you were reading that one, but I can see it on screen. Not sure if you're hearing me. I can see it on screen. Dequity provides equity financing. It can consider in some cases some form of preference share conversion, depending on where the company is in its growth stage. Long story short, I'd say yes, both equity and some form of mezzanine as well.
Stronglink wants to know, do you provide capital support as well as management guidance.
Correct. So a strong part of our business model is that what we do when we invest is our management team comes in as well. So, you know, we have, you know, our chief legal officer, we have our CFO. These people will come in, look at the weaknesses of the business, look at your policies, your procedures, see what needs fixing, fix your accounting. Sometimes the business is great, but the accounting is terrible. And, you know, I'm big on accounting. We're probably the first company to publish our financials most times. That's one of the first and most important things we fix when we look at the entrepreneur's business. So management next support, 100%.
Question. Awesome. Next question. How do you measure your risk exposure in the absence of audited financials for a portfolio business at Dequity?
Put it this way. We even look at companies that are, you know, mom and pop shop and, you know, most of the times people will have an accountant do their accounting for, you know, just so that they can do their tax filings, but they don't have a quote unquote reputable auditor. They're not going to have a PwC auditor and, you know, they don't have an accounting team. And what we have to do when we go in as a team with our management team is actually kind of look at their books and we kind of have to do it in the reverse. We look at their books and we go back to the beginning, to their first transaction, right? Back to see, you know, how did the company grow along? How did the company grow over time? A lot of times the accounting, there's a lot of problems with the accounting. And as I said, that's why that's one of the first things that we try to fix.
So I'm going to take this last question from Leon, and Leon says, GK Financial will be watching Dequity closely. They've brought a lot of businesses to IPO over the last decade. The GK approach through its first global is more hands-on than Barita. What's Dequity's approach?
I'm trying to decipher that one. Khalila, you're good at breaking down.
How involved are you going to be? I think you probably went over some of that when you were talking about how you want to assist entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. How involved are you in these companies? So do you sit on the boards or is it just a, I'll give you the money, you work it out kind of approach?
No. So to make it very clear, we come in, we don't want majority of your company. We'll take an associate stake, which is normally below 50%, but more than 20%. What we do is, you know, we put people on the board that have expertise in the industry that you're in. What we also do is that we use our management company to give management support to the entrepreneur to help build out weaknesses in the business. And like I said before, like in the accounts department, that's normally a big challenge for a lot of companies. We get that fixed. We know what needs to be done if you have the ambition to list your company. A certain level of corporate governance, there's a certain level of reporting requirements. You're going to be regulated. So we know exactly what to look for based on our experience. And those are the things that we try to, you know, one, put in place, and two, condition the mind of the entrepreneur to get used to. Because a lot of times what holds back entrepreneurs is, you know, when you're going to help an entrepreneur, sometimes they might feel as if, you know, you're trying to tell them what to do. So it's always about how do you break that
down. You're trying to take over the company.
Yeah. So I think that's actually a soft skill that we have that a lot of other investment companies, their approach to doing this might come off a different way. And I think that's a very strong skill set that we have when we actually sit and speak to entrepreneurs. I find us a lot more relatable.
So I know I said last question, but one just came in that I think is a good one. So last question coming from Jermaine. Would you invest in companies that are in the idea stage, in the idea phase? Oh, where did it go? I can't see it anymore. Hopefully you can see it on your screen. Oh, but have not yet launched or are not yet profitable.
So we have a... We definitely would have an investment, an approach to how we take on investments. I would not want to say that we will shut down a conversation about a great business plan, especially if it is well thought out. But those are really kind of like unicorn ideas. Very rarely, you know, without an idea being tried and proven, it will get an investment, but it can get a conversation.
Okay, at least a conversation. So guys, if you want to have that conversation, Kadeen already told you how to reach out to them. They have a website, make your pitch, make sure your elevator pitch is solid, and shoot your shot. You never know what might happen. Thank you so much for making the time to join us, Kadeen. Hope you enjoyed your vacation. Welcome back to Jamrock, and all the best in all the amazing things to come. I look forward to all these things, all these listings that you're going to be bringing us, and everything that's next for Kadeen Mears.
Thank you so much, Kalila. Thanks for having me. And keep up the good work with the show.
Excellent journalism. Thank you very much. All right, so to our viewers, it is time for your poll question, which is a bit later than you normally expect it. And now that you've had the opportunity to hear Kadeen speak, how do you feel about him resigning as CEO of Dollar Financial Services? A, I'm excited to see what he does next. B, I'm glad he's still at least on the board of Dollar. C, it's not a good move. D, I don't really care. E, other, just leave a comment. How do you feel? And I think, you know, now that you've heard that full interview with him, that probably is going to influence what you select on this poll. How do you feel about Kadeen Mears resigning as CEO from Dollar Financial Services? You excited? You're glad he's still at least on the board? You don't think it's a good move? Or you just don't care? Or you have another perspective? Leave that comment with us. And the link is on, this poll is on YouTube and X. It's not Twitter anymore. X marks the spot now. While you're at it, guys, hit the like button. We had great views tonight. Hit the like button and subscribe to the channel if you have not done that yet. Final announcements. So a lot has been going on over the past week, as you may have heard. Am I even on? Yes, I am on. So let me do this quickly before my internet just decides to abandon me tonight. But you may have heard that we were hacked on Facebook. And so for the past week, we were not able to even access our Facebook. If you notice tonight, we are streaming live on both YouTube and Facebook. So yesterday, we got back control of our Facebook page. Thank goodness, because, oh, yeah, it has been a nightmare in the past week. It is part of the reason we didn't have a show last week. We also said, you know, since it's Emancipation Day, might as well just, you know, not have a show, observe the holiday. But it was also a very stressful period for us behind the scenes, trying to figure out what went on with the hack. And because Facebook owns Instagram, Meta owns Facebook and Instagram. Facebook and Instagram are connected. And so it's affected a lot of how we do business via our social media platforms, which is one of our primary ways of doing business, of acquiring leads and clients and all that good stuff. So we use automation such as ManyChat that has to go through Facebook. We use Facebook Creator Studio, Facebook Business Suite to manage our Instagram page. All of that we were signed out of. We were logged out of it and did not have access to any of that. So fortunately, we were able to get back access to our Facebook page. And so this has given us some, it's resolved some of the issues, but not all of the issues. So we still have some issues. If you saw my video post about it last night, I explained, you know, how we were able to get it back and what are the issues that we're still having with our ads manager account and with our business manager account, whereby I still only have partial access on my own account because the hackers gave themselves full access and they gave me, they demoted me. Surprisingly, they didn't kick me off completely. Maybe they couldn't, but they demoted me to partial access. They gave themselves full access, and that is still the case. So even though I can now see it, I can now log in, they still technically have full access. Technically, I say, because I've changed all the passwords. So they, even though their email addresses are there, they're unable to log in. But that is affecting our ability to do some of the things that we do, because we record a lot of content in advance. You realize I'm not even in Jamaica right now. I'm all the way in Belize, but we're still publishing content as per our regular schedule because we would have pre-recorded some stuff last week. But it makes it that much more difficult for us to schedule out our content without access to Facebook Business Suite behind the scenes, and then to automate DM responses via ManyChat because I can't connect the Instagram back to the Facebook. It's just been a whole hot mess. Hopefully that part of it is sorted out soon. So yes, I'm back on Facebook. Also be aware of all the scam accounts. So a lot of people have been saying, have you been hacked on TikTok as well? Have you been hacked over here on Instagram? No, those accounts are fine. What you are seeing on TikTok is a lot of impersonators. So impersonators are different from, that's a different issue from being hacked. So if you look closely on those accounts, you'll notice that the spelling is slightly different. Many times there's just like one letter different in the name, but it's not me. That's somebody else completely talking to you from a different page. That's not my page. The issue with Facebook is that they were able to get into my legitimate page. And what they did was run up a $2,200 ads bill, which is still reflecting on my account, showing that I am liable for this account, even though some of the transactions were declined, because as soon as I realized we got hacked, I canceled those credit cards immediately, disconnected the PayPal from the Facebook, and so the transactions couldn't go through, but the purchases had already been made, so it is still showing on my Facebook ads account as if I owe that money. And the minute I was to try to, I would try to run ads again and try to link a payment source to that account, it's gonna bill me $2,200 and I'm not gonna pay that. Facebook needs to acknowledge that, you know, my account was hacked during this period and that I'm not liable for that. So I hope that they remove that charge from my account, because who wants to give away $2,200? Enough money that. That's why, like, 400,000 JMD. I ain't about that life. I'm about my money, as you know. So that's what's going on right now. We're still active. We're still producing content. I'm going to be bringing you some content here from Belize as well. I'm here for 2 weeks, visiting family, relaxing, taking a little bit of time off, but still, you know, doing stuff behind the scenes so that you can still get the information that you need. I appreciate you joining me tonight. I shall see you again next week for another riveting discussion right here on Taking Stock. Of course, guys, join the Money Mission community as well. We always have a lot going on in the community, less so this month, August, because like I said, I'm on vacation, kind of a working vacation, but we do have stuff planned. And if there's anything that you want to see inside the community, let me know in the comments as well, or just shoot me an email or comment on Instagram or send me a DM. Any way that you want to communicate, let us know what you would like to see inside that community. The link is in the description. Join our premium subscription, basic, purchase any of our courses, and of course, let's get this money. Later, guys. Bye.
Let's get this money.